Atmagyanatiradandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadam Tikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Parakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamsa Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sarvetam Sarvadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakham Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Tinamine Sri Varshabhavani Devi Dvaitaya Kripataye Krishna Sambandha Vijnana Daine Prabhave Namaha Madhuryo Jvala Premadya Sri Rupanuga Bhaktida Sri Gaura Karuna Shakti Vigrahaya Namostute Namaste Gauravani Sri Murtaye Dinatarine Rupanuga Virudhapa Siddhanta Dvanta Harine Namo Gaura Kishoraya Sakshat Vairagya Murtaye Vipralambara Sambode Padambu Jayate Namaha Namo Bhakti Vinodaya Sakchidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanuga Varayate Gaura Virbhava Bhumestvam Nirdesa Sajjana Priyaha Vaishnava Sarva Bhoma Shri Jagannathaya Te Namaha Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripashindubhyehevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namaha Varanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Name Gaura Svishe Namaha Panchatadvatmakam Krishnam Bhakta Rupa Sharupakam Bhakta Avataram Bhaktatyam Namami Bhakta Shaktikam He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanda Radha Kanda Namostute Vinatam Surato Pangor Mama Manda Matirgati Matsarvasva Padambojo Radha Marana Mohano Divya Vrindaranya Kalpatrumadha Srimad Ratnakara Simhasanasta Srimad Radha Srila Govinda Devo Vrishtali Vise Vyamanu Smarami Srimadra Sarasarambi Bhamshivata Tatastitaha Karshan Venu Svanir Gopi Gopinata Sri Estunaha Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavanishvari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamani Hari Priye Vrindai Tulsi Devai Priyai Keshavasya Vishnu Bhakti Prani Devi Sachavachai Namo Namaha Sri Nishringa Jai Nishringa Jai Jai Nadashringa Prahlada Desha Jaya Padma Mukha Padma Pringa Yada Yada Hitarmasya Glamir Bhavati Bharata Abhyutanam Adharmasya Tadatmanam Srijamyaham Parichanaya Sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam, dharma samsthapanarthaya, sambhavami yuge yuge, manmana bhava madbhakto, madhyaji mam namaskuru, mami vaishyasi yukvaivam, madmanam madparayanaha, sarvadharman parityaja, mamekam sharanam vraja, ahantam sarva papevyo, mukshayishami masujaha. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhara, Shivashari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We're continuing the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and we're up to text number 39. Esha te bihitas sankhye buddhir yoge kvimam shunu buddhya yukto yaya parta karma bandhan prahasisi. Thus far I have described this knowledge to you through analytical study. Now listen as I explain it in terms of working without fruitive results. O Sanaprita, when you act in such knowledge, you can free yourself from the bondage of works. Purport. According to the Nirukti, or the Vedic dictionary, Sankhya means that which describes things in detail, and Sankhya refers to that philosophy which describes the real nature of the soul. And yoga involves controlling the senses. Arjuna's proposal not to fight was based on sense gratification. Forgetting his prime duty, he wanted to cease fighting because he thought that by not killing his relatives and kinsmen, he would be happier than by enjoying the kingdom after conquering his cousins and brothers, the sons of Dhritarashtra. In both ways, the basic principles were for sense gratification. Happiness derived from conquering them and happiness derived by seeing kinsmen alive are both on the same basis of personal sense gratification, even at a sacrifice of wisdom and duty. Krishna, therefore, wanted to explain to Arjuna that by killing the body of his grandfather, he would not be killing the soul proper, and he explained that all individual persons, including the Lord himself, are eternal individuals. They were individuals in the past, they are individuals in the present, and they will continue to remain as individuals in the future, because all of us are individual souls eternally. We simply change our bodily dress in different manners, but actually we keep our individuality even after liberation from the bondage of material dress. An analytical study of the soul and the body has been very graphically explained by Lord Krishna. And this descriptive knowledge of the soul and the body from different angles of vision has been described here as Sankhya in terms of the Nirukti dictionary. This Sankhya has nothing to do with the Sankhya philosophy of the atheist Kapila. Long before the imposter Kapila's Sankhya, the Sankhya philosophy was expounded in the Srimad Bhagavatam by the true Lord Kapila, the incarnation of Lord Krishna, who explained it to his mother, Devahuti. It is clearly explained by him that the Purusha, or the Supreme Lord, is active and that he creates by looking over the Prakriti. This is accepted in the Vedas and in the Gita. The description in the Vedas indicates that the Lord glanced over the Prakriti, or nature, and impregnated it with atomic individual souls. All these individuals are working in the material world for sense gratification, and under the spell of material energy, they are thinking of being enjoyers. This mentality is dragged to the last point of liberation when the living entity wants to become one with the Lord. This is the last snare of Maya, or sense gratificatory illusion, and it is only after many, many births of such sense gratificatory activities that a great soul surrenders unto Vasudev, Lord Krishna, thereby fulfilling the search after the ultimate truth. Arjuna has already accepted Krishna as his spiritual master by surrendering himself unto him. Shishyasteham shadimam tvam prapanam. Consequently, Krishna will now tell him about the working process in buddhi yoga or karma yoga, or in other words, the practice of devotional service only for sense gratification of the Lord. This buddhi yoga is clearly explained in chapter 10, verse 10, as being direct communion with the Lord, who is sitting as Paramatma in everyone's heart. But such communion does not take place without devotional service. One who is therefore situated in devotional or transcendental loving service to the Lord, or in other words, in Krishna consciousness, attains to this stage of Buddhi Yoga by the special grace of the Lord. The Lord says, therefore, that only those who are always engaged in devotional service out of transcendental love does he award the pure knowledge of devotion in love. In that way, the devotee can reach him easily in the ever-blissful kingdom of God. Thus, the Buddhi Yoga mentioned in this verse is the devotional service of the Lord, and the word Sankhya mentioned herein has nothing to do with the atheistic Sankhya Yoga enunciated by the imposter Kapila. One should not therefore misunderstand that the Sankhya Yoga mentioned herein has any connection with the atheistic Sankhya. Nor did that philosophy have any influence during that time, nor would Lord Krishna care to mention such godless philosophical speculations. Real Sankhya philosophy is described by Lord Kapila in the Srimad Bhagavatam, but even that Sankhya has nothing to do with the current topics. Here Sankhya means analytical description of the body and the soul. Lord Krishna made an analytical description of the soul just to bring Arjuna to the point of Buddhi Yoga or Bhakti Yoga. Therefore, Lord Krishna's Sankhya and Lord Kapila's Sankhya, as described in the Bhagavatam, are one and the same. They are all Bhakti Yoga. Lord Krishna said, therefore, that only the less intelligent class of men make a distinction between Sankhya Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. Sankhya Yoga Pratak Bala Pravadanti Napanditaha. Of course, atheistic Sankhya Yoga has nothing to do with Bhakti Yoga, yet the unintelligent claim that the atheistic Sankhya Yoga is referred to in the Bhagavad Gita. One should therefore understand that Buddhi Yoga means to work in Krishna consciousness in the full bliss and knowledge of devotional service. One who works for the satisfaction of the Lord only, however difficult such work may be, is working under the principles of Buddhi Yoga and finds himself always in transcendental bliss. By such transcendental engagement, one achieves all transcendental understanding automatically by the grace of the Lord, and thus his liberation is complete in itself, without his making extraneous endeavors to acquire knowledge. There is much difference between work in Krishna consciousness and work for fruitive results, especially in the matter of sense gratification for achieving results in terms of family or material happiness. Buddhi Yoga is therefore the transcendental quality of the work that we perform. So let's have a discussion about the some of the points here. And one thing is that we're coming to the end of where Krishna had described Sankhya. And Sankhya means an analytical counting of something, to take it apart piece by piece and look at it really carefully. And so what are some of the ways earlier in this chapter that Krishna analytically looked at the difference between the body and the self? Just by remembering, or if you want, go back and look. But what are some of the ways that Sankhya philosophy was discussed?
If you think that this body is simply a bag of chemicals,
then what?
Then you have nothing to lament, because nobody laments for a bag of chemicals.
Okay. That is one of the points that Krishna made. So, you know, Arjuna's lamenting. It's this whole beginning of the Bhagavad Gita is Krishna coming in this situation of lamentation. And this is something that happens regularly in material life. It's a symptom of material consciousness to lament. And why is that? Why do we lament in material consciousness? Huh? Go ahead, Kishore.
We anger of something which we don't get.
And then we lament. So what does lamentation mean anyway?
Frustrated.
We expect it to be a certain way.
You expect it to be a certain way and then it doesn't come out? Everyone's had that experience in the material life. You expect it to be a certain way, and then it doesn't come out. And so there's a, you know, there's a lamentation for that, the lament. So this lamentation is what is it based on?
Huh?
Yeah. Can you say more about that? How is that? How is it related to the body?
Since this body is temporary, it's going to end someday.
So we falsely lament because we think we're the body, and then things in relationship to the body. Like one of the things that people, what are some of the things that people regularly lament about? If we were going to make a top five list of lamentable things in this world, what are the top five things? Yes?
Paying taxes.
Okay, that is definitely one of the top five. He just came from the tax man. Okay, that's one.
We desire something and we won't get it.
Yeah, but five specific things. One is taxes. What are four more things?
Yes. Root canal.
Root canal, okay. Root canal and other such things.
Insurance.
What are some, these are definitely things. What are some things that, you know, happen all the time? Yes.
Death.
Yeah, that's another big thing. People lament. Death, disease, yeah, another big thing is disease. So we've got taxes, we have root canal. So taxes, root canal, these are definitely situations where we lament. And then we have death, where, you know, somebody dies and we lament. And why do we lament when somebody dies? Because? Well, they're done. Huh?
Can't see them anymore.
And generally, generally we think, you know, I know who this person is. It's my mother, or it's my father, it's my son. And then when they die, we lament. So this point Ramaswamy brought up, Krishna's telling Arjuna that, you know, well, if according to some philosophers we're just a bag of chemicals, then really what are you lamenting if someone dies? What is it that, what's the big deal? You know, if someone drops a bag of chemicals off the back of a truck, they come and clean it up, but no one cries or has a funeral or anything like that. They just throw it in the dumpster and move on. So what's the difference, you know, if you just consider the body? And what other parts of Sankhya did Krishna talk about? Yes?
He says, as we can analyze, seeing the body passes from boyhood to youth to old age, similarly body transformation.
Ooh, valuable knowledge. So this is Sankhya. It's an analytical look at actually what we're going through in this world. We're changing from one body to the next, to the next. And then Krishna says, after you leave this body, it's not the end. You just take on another body. Okay, that was another thing that Krishna analyzed through Sankhya. What other Sankhya-esque teachings did he give in the second chapter? Bag of chemicals, changing bodies, what other kind of looks, angles did he look at?
Other way of saying that, like bag of chemicals, he said he gave another perspective to that.
Yeah.
You think it is body, if it is soul, will always be born and die forever. You still have no reason to lament.
Okay, so if there is a soul and you believe in the soul, like some people maybe mentioned there with the Buddhists, some schools of Buddhists, philosophers say, well, the soul is there, but then when it dies, when the body dies, somehow or other the soul becomes non-existent. So then you have no reason to lament either. There's nothing to worry about because you're just gone. So nothing to worry about there. Yeah.
The soul cannot be killed. It cannot be burned. It cannot be. It's not soluble.
Can't be dried up. Dried by the wind, wet by water, can't be cut by weapons, can't be burnt by fire. Any of those things? What else about the soul?
Invisible, inconceivable, immutable.
Invisible, inconceivable, immutable.
existed since millennia. It has existed. It is birthless and deathless and timeless.
Birthless, deathless, timeless.
Eternal.
Eternal, okay.
And another analytical point Krishna makes is that as you change your requirements, vasanti jirani, similarly
right.
You change the body. So
it gives the analogy to break it down for us so we can keep it in our consciousness, just like, you know, certain garments you wear day after day, they wear out, you throw them away. A car wears out, you get a new car, you drive off. The same thing, you're never going to die. And he told how all the everyone that's on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, they're all individuals now, they've been individuals in the past, and they'll be individuals in the future. It's not that the situation's going to change and they're all going to become one, or you know, once they become realized, they become God or something like that. They remain individuals. So that was a very important part. Anything else? Good.
For the non-permanent, for the soul, there is no death or non-permanent thing.
It's like you have it. For the things that actually exist, there's no cessation. They never go away. And for the things that don't really exist, there's no permanence. It's like a mirage. It just moves on and evaporates. It's vapor-like. So a self-realized person sees the difference between those two. He makes a distinction of that which exists and that which doesn't exist. So if we know that through Sankhya, through this explanation of Sankhya, what's real and what's impermanent, then we have a real basis in reality. How can that help us, practically speaking, to not lament? If we know what's permanent, what isn't permanent, it would change your outlook on life if you saw the difference between the things that always existed and the things that don't exist. Okay, well, one thing is you definitely invest your energy. If you really knew it, right, that one thing was like quicksand, or you know, and it was just going to take away your energy, and then another thing, you actually got a return out of it. Especially if you were interested in, well, if you saw the difference between those, you'd definitely go for the one that where you get a return out of it, right? The only reason we don't invest in the one where you get the real eternal return, and we invest in the one where you don't get a return, is what? It's a waste of time, but how come we waste our time? Why do we waste our time? Because we're faked out, huh?
Imperfect knowledge.
Imperfect knowledge, yeah. We've been tricked, actually. We have imperfect knowledge, and therefore we don't see. That's good. You know, everyone's searching, really, for perfect knowledge, isn't it? Because ultimately, everyone's searching for perfect happiness. Therefore, everyone who's searching for knowledge wants perfect knowledge. They don't want imperfect knowledge, do they? Because perfect knowledge means you can have perfect happiness. So sometimes people say to us, well, there is no end to knowledge. It just exists for, you know, the search is all I'm interested in. Have you ever heard that? People say there is no end, real end to knowledge. It's just, we just like to do the research. You've heard it before? Yeah, my father used to say that all the time.
There is no real end to Maya.
And there's no end to Maya. But then who's crazy? We do say there's an end to knowledge, which is to know Krishna. Whereas they say, there is no end to knowledge, and they keep searching, so who's crazy? The person who says there is no point to all this, and they keep doing it, or the person who says there is a point to it, and there is an end to all knowledge, and they go for it. So devotees are more intelligent because they understand this principle. There's something that actually exists, and there's something else that is non-permanent. Sankhya. What else? My favorite verse, Krishna says, some observe the soul is amazing, some hear of him as amazing, some see him as amazing. Others, even after hearing about him, don't understand him at all. Every soul is amazing, actually. Anywhere you look, every place you observe where there's life, it's amazing. Just observe. There are plants in my backyard who got through the winter time, and they have their own impetus. Now their little leaves are busting out. And for the vines, you know, they climb up and they start wrapping around. It's amazing. You watch how those little living entities in there. They know where to go and what to grab onto. And there's some wasps that they grew two nests in Tulsi's house last year. And we just left them alone because we didn't want to mess with them. They had their guards out there, you know, they're sitting out there on their motorcycles and stuff. And then they were like, so they built these big houses. And all summer long, all the way into the winter time, there were hundreds of wasps in there in Tulsi's house coming in and out, and we just left them be. Until the winter time when we looked and there was nobody left home, and then we knocked their houses down. So we didn't really want them in there in the first place. And then I just noticed that they came back to the exact place, and they started hanging out again, and now they're rebuilding. They got little cranes out there, and guys with hard hats on, directing traffic, and they're building these little combs that they live in. And they're sitting there looking at me like, yeah, come on, you know. You try it. Same places, too. One on this side, one on that side. They know exactly where to go. And you look at them, they know what's going on. The soul's amazing. Anything else in that second chapter, Krishna gave us Sankhya philosophy. Yes, Ruby.
Actually, I have a question which my son asked yesterday and I couldn't answer it. And now that he has got it deep, he's reading and he's trying to ask me a question.
Who is?
My son.
Oh, nice.
Okay, so which was good, but anyways, I couldn't answer it. What he was, and also relates to souls. Now, is there any way to really visualize or explain or prove that the souls are in different planets?
Satyadev Prabhu will answer that.
How old is your son?
How old is my son? His birthday is on Monday, so he's going to be 22.
Oh, 22.
Actually, 23. He would be 23. He's now 22.
Is he in college or out of college?
He just graduated from Clark College last year. He did take some Vedic thing.
Did he take any science courses?
Did he take any science courses? Yeah, he did.
Well, we can't, you know, prove it by material science that there's life on other planets and souls exist. But even on this planet, souls, they are finding, even in science, that souls are existing in areas and in situations that they never thought was possible before. Just like sometimes they have these, like, thermal outlets, like below the, like hot water that's coming out that's being heated up by the earth. They're like 170 degrees, or some living entities that they live on sulfur, they don't live on oxygen, and they're living in environments that scientists didn't think could support life. You know. So that's just a limited, you know, view that we have of the soul and what it can survive under. And then there's no reason to think reasonably that souls cannot live on different planes, different levels of existence. Why should we think just this one physical dimension? So, you know, so even in science of quantum mechanics and things like that, they're understanding that there's different dimensions, or like antimatter. There's matter, and then there's antimatter, and everything's existing on that dimension. It appears like on this dimension, but in a different dimension. So scientifically it can't be proved, but to try and limit the soul or limit the possibility is also not being very broad-minded. That's what I'd say.
Okay, so then we came into the section last couple weeks where Krishna gave a slightly different argument. First one was Sankhya, right? That Krishna was explaining how you're not your body, which is very powerful, isn't it? If you're in distress or if you're lamenting because someone died, oftentimes we meet people when we're on Sankirtan. This happens regularly. We'll meet somebody and they'll be very upset. And we'll say, what's the matter? And they'll say, well, I'm going to a funeral. And my mother died, my father died, my sister died, or something like that. And they're very much open to philosophy at that point. Often this is called Shmashan Vairagya. It means that the renunciation of the crematorium. If you go to the funeral, then you immediately you feel your own mortality because you're in that environment and you realize that I could die at any minute. So people are very open and they're lamenting. So a lot of times we show them, read this section of the Bhagavad Gita, starting with Dehino Sminyata Dehe Komaranyobaram Jara, that, you know, we're only changing bodies. People become solaced by that, don't they? And so that's one way Krishna was taking away the grief, the lamentation that Arjuna was feeling. He was giving the Sankhya philosophy. It's like, there's no reason to lament. You should do your duty because you're eternal. And this body can't be killed. It's going to go on forever. And if you do your duty according to what I'm asking you, then you'll actually get great benefit. So then he came and he gave some other types of arguments in the last couple of verses that we talked about. And how would you describe those arguments that he gave? Yes, Raksha.
Well, there he talks about what happens if Arjuna neglected his duty. And he says, if you neglected your duty, you are a fighter, you are a kshatriya, that's what your occupation is. You will incur sin if you neglect him. And then he also appeals to him from a worldly sense, it seems, mm-hmm. that he says that your reputation will be affected, which is really a worldly criterion that Krishna is using here, but he's using it for the argument and justification. So he says your reputation will be affected. The other generals will believe that you are not fighting because fear has taken you over and you are running away from battle. So he's appealing to him to go and fight and do his duty as a kshatriya. What the consequences would be by neglecting it.
Very nice. Anybody have anything to add to that? That's pretty complete. So you heard some Sankhya philosophy, then from a worldly point of view, your reputation will be ruined. You'll be considered a coward. They won't think that you're just being compassionate. They'll think that you're just afraid and you've just gone away from the battlefield. And how does that make Arjuna feel? It's like he's got that kshatriya spirit and the competition feeling. Okay, so now in this verse 39 that we've read, Krishna says that up till this point I've described to you the Sankhya philosophy and analytical kind of study, and now I'm going to give you some other kind of knowledge.
Can I ask a
question? Yes.
On the topic of Sankhya, I was reading Prahlad Maharaj when he's talking to his friends. He's really encouraging them to practice Sankhya in the terms of trying to analyze or see the difference between matter and spirit. And in the purport, Prabhupada's emphasizing that as a practice. And Prahlad Maharaj, he compares it to someone who has been trained how to analyze what is gold. So if a person doesn't have any training, then actually there could be gold in dirt or in a clump of rock, but the person who doesn't have any training can't distinguish where the gold is. And he says, therefore, you have to approach a guru and you have to be trained how to distinguish between matter and spirit. Mm. So that's one. But it seems a little almost like kind of anti-bhakti, because if one is practicing trying to distinguish between spirit and matter, it seems like he's just endeavoring with his intellect and not depending on Krishna. And in Prabhupada, he says that, you know, if we engage in devotional service and we chant Hare Krishna, then we'll get buddhi, we'll get intelligence from within, and this will come anyway. So my question is should we be practicing, should we be studying seriously Krishna's words about Sankhya and trying to understand it and trying to learn how to distinguish between matter and spirit? Or should we just
generate
Krishna?
Boy, is that a setup question? There's a nice verse in the Brahma Samhita in which Krishna says at the end of the Brahma Samhita, when he's speaking to Brahma, Prabhude Jnana Bhaktivyam Atmayananda Chinmayi Ude Tunitama Bhaktir Bhagavat Prema Lakshana, that to attain Prema, Bhagavat Prema Lakshana, that there he mentions certain ingredients, Prabhude Jnana Bhaktivyam. So to awaken one's original love for Krishna, there's some understanding that I'm not my body. Prabhude Jnana Bhaktivyam Atmayananda Chinmayi. You know, one understands from some point of view that I'm not this material body, that I actually am spiritual soul. Otherwise, what's the impetus? And sometimes when people are in lower modes of nature, if they're taking intoxication or if they're eating meat and really covered over, it's very difficult for them to chant Hare Krishna at all or to understand anything about spiritual philosophy. We've all had this experience of having some inkling ourselves that I'm not my body and that's why I'm engaged in spiritual service, but then try preaching to somebody else while they're drinking or something like that. I had that experience when I went to one of my friends from high school passed away, and I went to see him before he died, and then afterwards I went to the church and gave a eulogy for him. And then afterwards, in the church downstairs, there was a reception, and they were serving alcohol. And there was a teacher of mine from high school, and she had seen me in high school. She knew that I had gone off and joined the Hare Krishnas because she saw me right before I took off. And then she heard that I had joined the movement, and she was my history teacher. So she was wondering, you know, what happened, you know, what it was like, what my life went like, and everything like that. And so we met up. I hadn't seen her in 34 years or something like that. And so then we were talking, and she was actually very interested, and she was asking me about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And meanwhile, she was drinking some wine or something at the same time. And I had this feeling as I was explaining a little bit, I was trying to explain how, you know, there's a difference between the soul and the body, and it was going right over her head, you know. And I could tell that she just didn't get it. She seemed very bewildered that this is, you know, it's not understandable. And for someone who's doesn't have some kind of understanding that he or she isn't the body, the impetus to take the spiritual life is not very great. On the other hand, you know, people come from all different backgrounds to Krishna consciousness, and they come into Krishna consciousness in different, you know, different modes and for different reasons. And sometimes people come in who don't have any understanding of philosophy at all, and just by the association of devotees and just by hearing, then they become awakened to the fact, you know, by doing bhakti. They might come to the temple and have no background whatsoever, but for some reason or another, they were attracted. I mean, sometimes people come for the funniest reasons or just because it looks like something to do, and they'll come in and then, you know, gradually they'll gain the knowledge from hearing, which is a direct process of bhakti. It's not, you know, separate. But you hear the philosophy and then it awakens in your heart. And coming, this is apt question, because coming into this section, the next verse, Neha Bikramanashosti Pratyavayana Vidyate Swapamapyasidharmasya Trayate Mahatobayat, a very important section where Krishna is going into this buddhi yoga, which really means that one's intelligence to understand that he or she is not the body is being awakened by Krishna from within the heart. So a little jnana in the beginning, as you always give the example, if your car is stalled, then, you know, if you give it a little push or a jumper cable to get it started, then once it's started, those things aren't necessary. So similarly, one may need some stimulation of knowledge, prabhude jnana bhaktivyam, in the very, very beginning to understand that one's not the body. But then, you know, jnana, vairagya, all those things come as concomitant factors to the hearing process through bhakti. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayat Yashu Vairagyam Jnanam Cha Yadahaitukam. Automatically they'll come as a byproduct of performing bhakti. And so then there is a way that we also have to be observant of our own selves as we're practicing bhakti yoga and not just take it for granted. And we should pay attention to the fact that we're not the body. For instance, we were talking about in the japa seminar how when you sit down to chant japa, there is a way in which you should introspect within yourself and see that I'm actually a soul before you begin. You know, we were talking about your sankalpa, get yourself ready, get ready to chant. You know, are you your body or are you something else? Are you chanting because, you know, you want a better house or a car or more money or something like that? Really, you should analyze, what is it that's going on? Am I my body? Am I my mind? Or am I the soul? And if I'm my soul, what do I really need except for bhakti? And so there is a way that, you know, there is some sankhya that enters into the process when we first sit down and we begin the flow, because we may be covered over by the modes of material nature, and we need to uncover that and define our purpose and move ahead in bhakti with determination, knowing that actually I'm a spirit soul and I'm dependent on Krishna. I'm not my body. So, you know, there are different angles of looking at it, and it's not that bhakti is powerful enough in and itself to fully infuse us with all knowledge. At the same time, if one is very covered over and cannot even begin the process due to lack of understanding that he's not the body, then also some gyan, understanding kshetra, kshetragya, is helpful to induce one to move forward on the path of bhakti. How did I do, Satya? Okay. I get nervous because that's when I have to answer correctly.
Probably one more thing is that the scriptures, if they are studied under a bona fide spiritual master, one can get the right conclusion from the scriptures. The Lord does the analysis of Sankhya Yoga in the second chapter. Later on in the sixth chapter, he gives about meditation. And should I stop at meditation and go run off to Himalayas and set up a Kusha class? Should I going. The same Lord comes as Mahaprabhu and says the most important thing for you is chant Hare Krishna. So if you have like a bona fide spiritual guide, then they can extract the essence of what needs to be done for progress.
Give me the verse. One who has implicit faith in both his guru and spiritual master, a guru and Krishna, to such a person all the imports of Vedic knowledge are simultaneously, automatically revealed. You know? Does anybody know the verse? To one who has implicit faith in both Krishna and the spiritual master, to such a person, all the imports of Vedic knowledge are simultaneously and automatically revealed. You can look it up. It's in the Shloka book.
How do we break down this word faith? You know, because faith and faithful, to me, you know, if you're faithful, then you're following. You're and to have implicit faith, you know, what is that word actually? Implicit, a strong faith, you know, without any doubt. So if you have no doubt and you're full of faith, then you're following exactly what Krishna and the spiritual master want, right?
Yeah, the definition of faith is given in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Shabda shabde vishwas kahi surida nishchoy Krishna bhakti koila sarva karma krita hoy. That faith means the strong, very determined belief and understanding that just by performing Krishna bhakti, that everything else will be taken care of. All other karmas are done, are finished. You know, that's the root of everything. As Krishna says in the end of the eighth chapter of Vedeshu, Yagneshu Tapasu Chaiva, that you know, if you want to do yajnas, if you want to do tapasya, if you want to study the Vedas, if you want to do anything, if you just do bhakti, then automatically all those other things are taken care of. So strong faith, firm faith, means understanding this fact that Krishna is the source of all the demigods, Krishna is the source of all the material and spiritual worlds. Anything I want within this world comes from Krishna, ultimately. If I worship the demigods, Krishna says, and they fulfill my desires, even that is coming from me. And so we all have faith, Krishna says in the beginning of the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that everyone has faith. It's the nature of the soul to have faith. But when the faith comes in contact with sattva, rajas, and tamas, it gets colored in different ways, and it gets projected. So someone's faith in the mode of passion is projected in a certain way. Someone's faith in the mode of ignorance is projected in a certain way. They have faith in certain things. But faith itself is actually a part of the living entity. And when it becomes purified, then that becomes directed, firm faith in serving Krishna and dedicating all our activities to Krishna through Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Parasevanam, Archanam, Bandham, Dasyam, Sakyam, Mani Vedanam. So we only need really to purify our faith. You found it? Well, I'll give you another clue about this verse. It won't help you find it, but one time our godbrother Guru Kripa was speaking to Prabhupada, and he said, Prabhupada, what's the most important verse in the Vedas? And Prabhupada said, what do you think? And he said, Vedas meaning everything. He said, Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo, Nasteva, 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 Gatir, Anyata. And Prabhupada said, well, that's a nice choice, but no. Here's the most important verse. And he gave him this other verse that you're looking for. So,
is it the verse that you just quoted?
No.
Oh, okay. No, you're talking about a different verse.
One who has implicit faith in both spiritual master and in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to such a person, all the imports of Vedic knowledge are automatically and simultaneously revealed.
I just heard that on a tape.
You just heard it?
Yeah, just
okay. You looking in the index? You found it. She's got it. Mahoney got it. You cheated. Okay, well, cheat for the right cause. It's okay. Go ahead. Go ahead. Page number? 364. Yasya Devi para bhaktir yata devi tata goro tasya ite katita hyarta prakashante mahatmanaha. So there's some people that have implicit faith in the lotus feet of their spiritual master and in Krishna. And to them, the imports of all Vedic knowledge are revealed. And so in talking about this, do we need to become, you know, fixed up in Sankhya philosophy or, you know, become great jnanis? There may be a way in which someone will come who's very faithful and dedicates himself to the practice at the feet of a spiritual master, as Shivas Pandit Prabhu was pointing out, and Krishna will impart that knowledge within their heart. Did I answer your question, Dainidi?
I don't know, what did I ask?
Yeah, something faith. About faith.
About
yeah.
Faith. Yeah. Actually, yeah, you answered it.
Okay.
I was thinking, you know, along with what you were saying there, sort of goes with Sarvadharma Pritchacha. Abandon all varieties of religion. You have to have faith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by having faith, you'll abandon all varieties of religion.
Right. Yeah, very good point. And there's another verse. Yes, Prabhuji. Yes, go ahead.
Krishna makes in the so hard to get this knowledge.
It's not that he makes it harder. It's just that we are stupider. You know, he says right in the beginning of the seventh chapter, Maya Sakta Mana Partha Yogam Yunjanam Nadashraya, that just touch Srinu, that if you just hear from me, you'll know everything. So it is straightforward, it is simple, and he says just surrender. It's not anything different. It's just, you know, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes, there's a way in which he is, he canvasses, he runs after people and makes sure that they get it. But it's still, Krishna's presentation is simple. Just hear from me. And he gives simple understanding that I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead and just surrender unto me. Maya sakta mana partha yogam yunjan marashraya asham shayam samagramam yata gyasas yitachtrinu. That you'll know everything if you just hear from me. So just if we just accept what Krishna says, then it's simple. Like Prabhupada said, it's simple for the simple. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did run after us to try to make sure that we got it. Because even the students that he was teaching, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in a certain mood, they didn't understand it. So just to capture them and to get the people who were envious of him, he took sannyas when he was a young man, just so they'd bow down to him. So there's a way in which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, Krishna says, surrender to me. That's simple. He says, just hear from me. That's simple too. But people don't do it. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he comes, he runs after everybody and makes sure that they get some prasadam. Factually speaking, you know, that's what, you know, he made that. He broadcast it so everyone came in contact somehow or other.
I was thinking a lot about this, that people would, if they would take it with all faith and would take it very easy, the death, so it will change the face of the society, it will change everything. All the institution, all the activities, you know, well, then probably there will be no hospitals and stuff like that, probably, you know. And no insurance, and no pay. I mean, it's kind of like where I'm taking from is, you know, the story when this eight, you know, the Ganga came came here to the earth, and she was some. Buses, and then she just killed them because they asked her. Just they were cursed, and they said, we have to take birth as humans, just kill us because we want to go back. So, and this is like kind of picture what would happen if everybody would take very easy this, that there is no death, no matter of, I mean, there's no reason to be sad, as Krishna saying, no reason. In both cases, if you believe or you do not believe, there is no reason to be sad because of that. I mean, it's very easy, it's logical. And I'm thinking, if everybody would take it, something will change this society. And this is changes, is good or not, that's what I was thinking, because we are trying to...
Well, sometimes preachers think like that, well, everyone in the world should get this. Krishna, of course, says in the Bhagavad Gita, Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschid nuam veti tatvataha, that out of many millions of men, only a few endeavor for self-realization, and out of all those, only a few actually understand in truth what the real purpose of it is and what the goal of religion is. So sometimes Prabhupada used to preach that, you know, the whole world would become Krishna conscious, and at other times he would say, only a few people can take this because it's so rare. It's not that everyone will get it at the same time. And it's not that the whole material world will become reformed if everyone takes to Krishna consciousness. It's certified by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, Dukhalayam Ashashvatam. It is certifiably, is certified as a place of misery. It's the alayam. What is a bhojanalayam? What is a bhojanalayam? It's where you go to eat, right? Well, this is the what alayam? The dukkalayam. Okay, so you go to the bhojanalayam to eat, right? And you go to the dukkalayam to because it's miserable. That's what it is. That's what this place is. It's a place of misery. And it's not that the whole material world becomes reformed. It's just like if you're in prison and you say, we're going to make this the happiest place on earth. Well, you know, good luck. You can reform yourself from within your cell and your cell block. You can get them all reading and chanting and everything. And they'll become blissful and detached from their situation, but not that the whole material world becomes reformed. Even when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was personally present, you know, on the planet, there were all kinds of anomalies happening at the time. You know, during his advent in this world, the Muslim kings were in charge of things. And there were all kinds of bad things happening at that time. Even the Vaishnavas felt threatened because of the presence of the Muslim rulers and so on. So it's not that, the whole material world all of a sudden becomes reformed, but best thing we can hope for, first of all, is to definitely reform ourselves. And I don't know about the hospital thing.
I was referring just for changing the body. Like, for example, I would give an example because it's very easy to take this. Because, like, if something happened to my car, I can be frustrated, I can be mad. But if I know that it's very easy that I just will go and take another car.
It's not easy, though. Yesham tvantagatam papam, jananam punyakarmanam. You know, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, only someone who's come to a position of sinlessness can be very determined in this spiritual life. Yesham tu anta gatam papam. Papam means sin, and anta means the end. People who have come to the end of committing sin, they can understand and be determined in spiritual life. Like I was saying earlier, people who are engaged in intoxication and all kinds of sinful life, you try to talk about how you're not your body, and they don't get it. It's very difficult. So, but anyway, your point is, I think, that if people understood they're not their body, that simple point, then they would be eager for spiritual life and going back to Godhead. They wouldn't be worried about the material world as much. Something like that.
I'm thinking that there is two types of sankhya, right? Well, atheistic sankhya probably talks about the same thing. I don't know. I have no idea what this atheist people are saying about, but probably something.
He's saying that ultimately there's no God. That's what he's saying. He's saying that we just exist, independent. There is no supreme personality of Godhead. That we merge, and ultimately when you become freed from the material entanglement, then you merge into God, and you are God, you become God, and so on. So that's atheistic philosophy, because it doesn't accept the conclusion that there's a supreme personality of Godhead. Anyway, this next verse, number 40, I want to get to tonight, because this is entering into the next section, and I'll read the Sanskrit, and we can chant it out loud. Please repeat. Neha bikrama nashosti. Pratyavayo navidyate. Svalpam apyasya dharmasya. Trayate mahato bhayat. Na.
There is not.
Iha. In this yoga. Abhikrama.
In
endeavoring. Nashaha.
Loss.
Asti.
Asti.
There is.
Pratyavaya.
Diminution.
Na.
Never.
Vidyate.
There is.
Swalpam.
A little. Api.
Although,
asya, of this, dharmasya, occupation,
trayate,
releases,
mahataha,
from very great,
bhayat,
danger. In this endeavor, there is no loss or diminution, and a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. Do you mind reading the purport?
Activity in Krishna consciousness, or acting for the benefit of Krishna without expectation of sense gratification, is the highest transcendental quality of work. Even a small beginning of such activity finds no impediment, nor can that small beginning be lost at any stage. Any work begun on the material plane has to be completed, otherwise the whole attempt becomes a failure. But any work begun in Krishna consciousness has a permanent effect, even though not finished. The performer of such work is therefore not at loss, even if his work in Krishna consciousness is incomplete. 1% done in Krishna consciousness bears permanent results, so that the next beginning is from the point of 2%. Whereas in material activity, without 100% success, there is no profit. Ajamil performed his duty in some percentage of Krishna consciousness, but the result he enjoyed at the end was 100% by the grace of the Lord. There is a nice verse in this connection in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1:5:17. Go ahead.
Tyaktva sudharm charanam bhujam harer vachana pakvo tapatit tato yadi yatrakva babadram abuda mushikim kovarta apto bhajatam sudharmataha.
If someone gives up his occupational duties and works in Krishna consciousness and then falls down on account of not completing his work, what loss is there on his part? And what can one gain if one performs his material activities perfectly? Or as the Christians say, what profit a man if he gain the whole world yet suffers the loss of his eternal soul? Material activities and their results end with the body, but work in Krishna consciousness carries a person again to Krishna consciousness, even after the loss of the body. At least one is sure to have a chance in the next life of being born again as a human being, either in the family of a great cultured brahmana or in a rich aristocratic family that will give one a further chance for elevation. That is the unique quality of work done in Krishna consciousness.
Full optimism here. We should have now, because bhakti yoga is so powerful that even a little bit of it done in this life guarantees your success ultimately. And there was a little those ghee lamps they burn in temples in India. Once there was this ghee lamp and it was burning down. You know, you have to push it every once in a while to put the wick a little further out. And so it was burning down, and a rat came in. And he was looking for something to eat. And the ghee wick was just about to go out. And then the Lord's altar would be in darkness. But that rat, he looked and he saw that there was something that looked like it was edible. Kind of smelled good, like ghee, you know. So he started nosing around in there. And he just happened to push the ghee wick out a little bit. And then the flame went up again and kept going. And so that rat attained salvation because he had done some service. He didn't exactly know what he was doing. He was nosing around for a little bite to eat, but he got the benefit. Similarly, Srila Prabhupada used to say, in fact, Prabhupada told that story, and he also said that sometimes we offer flowers and we bring them in, and then there are little ants or something on the flower we didn't notice, and we put them on the altar. And he said, then the ant will come and he will kiss the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of God on the altar. And he said, he gets all benefit from this. So bhakti, and we know the story of Ajamil. Prabhupada says here, even though he wasn't fully advanced in Krishna consciousness, in his early life, Ajamil performed devotional service dutifully. But then due to chance, he fell down because he saw a scene of sense gratification and it got in his mind and it fell down. And for years and years and years and years, he was in a fallen state. But that at the time of death, because of his past activity and because he had named his son Narayan, that was part of his pious credit coming back, that he had the intelligence to do that. He called out for his son Narayan, and then he thought of Narayan at the time of death. And he was saved from the Yamadutas and given a full chance to then go back to Godhead, which he did. So a little advancement in devotional service. Now this verse that Prabhupada gives, Tyakvasa Dharmam Charanam Bhujan Harer Bhajana Pakvota Patetado Yadi, it's a very important verse to remember, because sometimes we get in this, there's two sides to it. One side is, well, the thing is, here's the Daksha side. Everyone knows the story of Daksha and Narada Muni. Daksha, he was had a job in the beginning of this universe. There wasn't a lot of population, so he was one of the ones that was helping to populate the universe. So he had a bunch of sons, and then he wanted those sons to get trained up in how to do ritualistic activities, have nice families. He would have arranged marriages for them all, and get them into, you know, like a software engineering thing. And, you know, he had this whole plan, and then Narada Muni came along and preached to them and got them to take sannyas. And they ran off to take sannyas, and Daksha was furious with him, you know. And he did it twice, actually, to him. He had another set, and finally had some daughters, and it was finished. So anyway, on his side, on Daksha's side, he was saying, you know, you have to go through the full course of material life to come to understand actually how futile it is and everything. And from Narada Muni's point of view is, well, why not just take to it right now? It's so auspicious. You shouldn't wait. And, you know, devotional service is so powerful. You take to it and become purified. So this verse, Tyaktvasu Dharmam Charanam Bhujam Harer, is this actually spoken by Narada Muni too, isn't it?
Yeah,
so this is Narada's side. Tyaktvasu Dharmam. Now we've been talking about dharma, right, Rakshit Prabhuji, about, you know, everyone has some dharma, some duty to perform in society, right? And here he's saying, Tyaktvasu Dharmam, right? Earlier, Krishna was saying, Swadharmam api chavikshva navi kampitum arhati dharm yadit yadachtreya nat kshatriya shanavidyate. You're supposed to do your duty as a kshatriya, then you'll get, you know, advancement from that. This verse, now coming to this Buddha Yoga section, tyaktva means throw it away. You know, just tyaktva, it even sounds like that. You know, he has somebody, you know, tyaktva. You want some? Tyaktva. Tyaktva swadharmam. What are you throwing away? Swadharma. You're throwing away your dharma. So, tyaktva swadharma charanam bhujam harer. If you throw away your dharma, to what? To take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, right? Bhajana pakvo tapatetado yadi. Now, apakvo means not ripe. Like, pakka means ripe. Like you say, oh, he's a pakka Brahmin. You know, he's like, he's fully ripe, you know. There's a pakka Brahmin, or he's a pakka Mayavadi, you know, pakka this, a pakka that. You know, this is apakko. Same word means he's not ripe yet. And we saw this over and over again, and sometimes we still see this, not as much though, but in our day, joining the Krishna consciousness movement, people in the early days, Dainiti saw it, others saw how thousands of people were coming into Krishna consciousness, but they were apakvo. They were not ripe at all. In fact, a lot of them took sannyas, and a lot of them took, you know, big, huge projects. Like Prabhupada would say, okay, join the Krishna consciousness movement. Yes, sir. Shave your head. Yes, sir. You know, go conquer Europe. And he'd go, yes, sir. You know, how old are you? 18. You know? Do you have a ticket? No, but I'll get one. And they're off to Europe, you know, and they're conquering the world. And so, but then later on, like, you know, something happens and they go like, wait a minute, who am I? I can't conquer Europe, especially, you know, after Prabhupada left and everyone started looking around and go, who are we? What happened? And devotees realized, maybe I'm not ripe. And some devotees left even for one reason or another, you know, material influence or, you know, past bad habit or so many things. So what this verse is saying, big deal. At least you took to Krishna consciousness even for 1 second. Better to give, what this verse is saying, better to give up your whole duty as a Brahmin, Kshatriya, as a business magnate. So what if you go to college and you made it to Harvard? You know, so what if you got a 4.1 all the way through high school and then college, and then you got, you know, you were the top-seeded person and you became a CEO and you made $1 billion. So what? Doesn't make any difference. But if for 1 minute you take to Krishna consciousness and you gave that up, that's better. then you really gain something. That's what this verse is saying. So, yatra kwa bhavadrama buddha mushikim, he's asking the question, what do you get if you do everything right on your material duty, but you don't take to Krishna consciousness? Kovarta apto budget abhajatam swadharmata. Abhajatam means if you don't have any bhajan, you don't have anything. So if you do your duty properly, you're very successful materially, but you're abhajatam, no bhajan, then useless. But if you take up and you take to this bhajan process, take to bhakti yoga, even a little bit, then your advancement is permanent. And Ajamil proves that. Look at, you know, in the story of Gajendra, you know the crocodile? He was also given, got great benefit and liberation from that situation. You know why? Why he got such great benefit? Why? The crocodile.
No,
I'm talking about the crocodile. We know Gajendra was a devotee in his previous life, but why did the crocodile himself get so much benefit? Because he was touching the feet of a Vaishnava. So even he was biting him. You know, for 100 celestial years, he was biting onto the feet of a Vaishnava. And Prabhupada says, because he was at the feet of a Vaishnava, he got so much benefit. You know, so this verse saying, Neha Bikramanashosti, Pratyavaya, swalpam up yasya, just a tiny little bit. And this comes into our Sankirtan mood that, you know, Chaitanya and Nityananda, they came everywhere canvassing to give everyone some prasad. Prasada lesha, that just by a lesha, a tiny trace, a little start, a little advancement, they don't even know exactly what they're doing. You know, we see people come up, like this lady came up when we were at Walmart a couple weeks ago, and she had no idea what Krishna consciousness was. She believe it or not, she hadn't heard a Hare Krishna movement before. But she came over and she was all happy. And she said, what is this? I'm so glad you guys are out here. This looks like a good idea. And she bought a couple of books. Have you heard of Bhagavad Gita? No, I haven't, but I'd sure like to read it. And walked away. Eternal benefit from that. So this Buddha Yoga process is so powerful that if someone takes to it even a little bit, that their gain is permanent. And if they make 1% advancement, then they'll take that up. And Krishna talks about this in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Srimatam, Shuchinam Srimatam Gehe Yoga Brashto Bidayate. Even if one takes to yoga and then falls down, Yoga Brashta, that he, in his next life, he takes it up again, right where he left off again. He comes up to that point and remembers, he'll come in contact, Krishna makes all arrangement, and he becomes advanced to that point and he takes up. But Prabhupada's saying even here that it's so auspicious that even if you only make 50% advancement, there is a way in which Krishna can fill in the gap for you. He can fill in the gap. Like he says this about Ajamil, that he had only made a little bit of advancement, but at the end, because he remembered Krishna, he was given full credit. He got full credit. Krishna can do that. He can grant a full pardon to anybody. He can give that, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's why he's Namo Mahavaranyaya. He's the most magnanimous, because he's going around giving full credit to everybody just for a little bit of engagement in devotional service. So this verse is very optimistic, and there's no reason to take to anything else except for bhakti. Because by bhakti, then we're saved from everything. Mahato bhayat, the greatest fear is not passing the test, coming to that test and not being able to pass it. Before my father passed away, my wife was there with him about a week ahead of time, and she saw him, and he looked nervous. And she said, are you nervous about something? And he said, yes. She said, what is it? He said, I think I have a big test to take. He had Alzheimer's, you know, so he wasn't, you know, fully, you know, cognitive reasoning, everything wasn't so intact. But he said, you know, when you come into death, no matter what state you're in, there's a way that Krishna gives you a lot of mercy for everybody because you know a test is coming. And if you spend your life or even a little part of that life to engage in Krishna consciousness, then you can be ready for that test at the time of death. And that's the whole purpose of human life, is to become ready for that. Ante Narayana Smritihi. Become ready so at the time of death you can remember Narayan. You can remember Krishna at the end. And Krishna will give great help to anyone who does that. He'll fill in the gap for somebody who's sincere. And this is part of what Buddha Yoga means. Buddha Yoga means that Krishna knows your sincerity in your heart. This verse, Tesham Satata Yuktanam Pajitam Pritipurvakam Tadami Buddha Yogam Tam Yenamam Bhyantite. If there's a sincere desire within the heart of the person, even if everything else has gone haywire, Krishna knows. He understands the sincerity within the heart that that person is trying to offer. We may be compromised because of our material condition. Like Jatayu was a bird, and he was an old bird. He could barely move, but he tried to fight off Ravana, and he lost. But he was given full credit because he tried. He did a little bit of devotional service for Ram, and he got full credit for that. So we should just become fully convinced that the only benefit in life, really, is to take to this Buddha Yoga. Karma Yoga means to dedicate our activities, our wealth, our life, our mind, body, speech, everything to Krishna. And then we'll become happy. And we'll become fully decorated by that. And fully, everything will be there just by bhakti. Prabhuji. Page 195 in the Shloka book, yeah? Etavanan sankhya yokabhyam sudharma parinishtaya janmalabha para pumsam ante narayana smiti. The highest perfection of human life achieved either by complete knowledge of matter and spirit, by practice of mystic powers, or by perfect discharge of occupational duty is to remember the personality of Godhead at the end of life. Okay, so best thing is to practice now. And so we've been talking about japa and how important that is for our personal practice, because there's a time when we do japa, it's our personal thing, when we can fully give our heart to Krishna and pray to Krishna and ask for his guidance and blessing and call out his name in a prayerful way. So we've been taking just a little time to talk about japa in the last few weeks since we did the japa seminar. And how many of you have, let's say, is there anyone here who has had been thinking about japa a little bit more, and have you had any realizations about your japa that you wanted to talk about? Yes, Malini. Nice point. Very nice point. Yeah. Thank you.
I also have some kind of thought that we can see it as like sentimental some routine, right? And we can see the serious process. And I was thinking, if we will first of all, for ourselves, we'll take it as a serious yoga process, and then we will present this process to others. It will be very powerful. I was thinking, because I'm running around and see so many places where the people coming to make yoga, and it's just kind of exercises, which is even not real asanas, which was given by Patanjali, right? So many things that they've changed already, and people just really looking for yoga. And I was thinking,
nice if you would do this. That's kind of like places when we do like yoga, bhakti yoga instructors who will teach how to really chant japa and meditate as a yoga process.
Okay, so talk to me, Satyadev and I afterwards, and we'll make a plan to start maybe next month or something. We can make a little thing, and we'll start it in the city, and you can help us follow up. Okay? We'll make a little class, and then we can advertise, start a little advertisement, and we can invite some people. Is that what you mean? Okay, so we'll do it. I think that we've been thinking about it, and this is a good idea. You can bring the drive your cab by and drop them off. I'm serious, though. We could definitely start something. We have the ideas, but you help us, and we'll put it together, and then we can start. Maybe start at the end of April, in May, because we're leaving for Japan and stuff. But we could come up with the plan before that. Any other thoughts, japa thoughts? Yes, Bhakta Paul. Okay.
You know,
go ahead.
At the Sunday feast several years ago, I don't know if anyone was here, like, I don't know, 5-6 years ago or something, we used to chant around.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone together at the Sunday feast. Do you remember that? Were you?
Yeah.
Chanted one round. Everyone chanted a round together. I think even at the same time, you know, everyone, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. It took like 11 minutes or something, you know, because it wasn't like everyone was chanting, but everyone was actually chanting at the same, you know, time. One whole round. So everyone finished, started with the same beat, it ended with the same beat. I liked that a lot, actually. I thought that was pretty cool.
Do you still have a group? I know you do it a little differently in Japan, but do you still do a group japa for the Sunday program?
Yeah. But we stopped everyone chanting in unison and encouraged everyone to chant at their own pace.
Either way, like we were doing the other day, it was powerful in the room. Everyone was sitting chanting. And the thing I got the most out of the seminar, even though I was helping to conduct it, was to listen to everybody. It's really stayed in my mind. You know, when I went by and heard so many devotees chanting Hare Krishna, it left a real impression. And it is powerful. We can start doing that again. Definitely a good idea.
I was going to say, the listening, you know, you were saying chant the way you normally chant, which, you know, is a little difficult to do when, you know, someone's listening. So, you know, I was thinking that, you know, to make it more real would be to, you know, close your eyes or something, like, you know, close your eyes. Well, I mean, I guess that's a personal thing. Then I don't know when you're listening.
Right.
But, and also to come in, you know, not at the first, but like someone was saying that they had a hard time chanting, like after, you know, 10 rounds or 12 rounds, if the song is pronouncing properly. So, of course, you know, we're not going to chant 16 rounds altogether, but, you know.
Well, a lot of temples, they do. In fact, you know, ideal situation is where, you know, you live with a group of devotees and you can be together when you chant. And everyone can chant at a volume where, you know, it doesn't drown anybody else out. This can be problematic, too, if we get into a temple room and, you know, some devotees chant really loud and then others can't hear. But there's an etiquette. You can all sit together and chant. So we should all come to Mangal Artik. And then we can sit together and chant, you know, japa sometimes. Maybe we'll do that for, you know, one of the appearance days or something. I think some devotees already do drive over for, probably Ashutosh is here, for some of the holy days, things like that. We can come together. This is ideal. In most temples, New Vrindavan, devotees chant together in the temple room for their japa. And it's nice, because then you feel the power of others doing it, and you become inspired. This is normal type of thing. We're in an unusual situation, because we all live every different places, so we have to make best do. But moving forward, we can try for those things. Yes?
I read it again, and I got something down.
conscious about it that I'm not trying to do it properly. I was aware of it, even though I didn't follow it. So on Wednesday, it's just that guilt built up on me. And I just came from work and just went to the temple room and sat down on the couch for even if I'm not moving for another half an hour. It helped me, to be conscious of it, be aware of it.
This is very nice to hear, too, because I'm sure others have that same experience. And it's not that it's easy. You know, Arjuna said the same thing, to control the mind, it's like the wind. And Krishna said by what? Practice and detachment. So practice means, like we talked about before, abhyas, means you do something over and over and over again. And in the beginning, it's going to be very difficult. And that's where you feel the advancement, the victory, when it's the hardest. And the mind says, no, no, not today. No, I ain't sitting on that seat. And you go, okay, well, listen, just for 2 seconds. You know, just I'm sitting down for 3 mantras, that's all. You can trick the mind and say, just 3 mantras, that's it. Then you sit down and then, okay, 3 mantras, just 3 more. 3 more, 3 more, 3 more. You know, there's a story of Valmiki. He attained all perfection. He wouldn't chant at all. He was so bummed out that when Narada Muni came and said that you should chant the names of the Lord, he said, I'm so sinful, I can't even say anything. You ever feel like that? Devotees say it all the time. I can't chant. I mean, forget it, you know. So Narada tricked him. He said, you can't chant Rama, huh? You go, all right, well, you're such in a bad mood, chant death. Just say Mara over and over again, because that's what you're thinking about. He goes, all right, Mara, 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 Mara. And he sat there for, what, 16,000 years later. And the Ramayana was revealed in his mind. An anthill had grown over him because he sat there for so long. But it was revealed. So one way or another, trick your mind into sit down and, you know, say, I can't chant Hare Krishna today. Say, okay, well, let's chant death. How do you like that? Okay. You know, whatever way you can get in there. Yes.
I started thinking about, okay, when I was doing my round, mind goes everywhere, and it's very hard to bring them into Krishna consciousness. So what I thought was, I tricked my mind. I started thinking, okay, instead of going everywhere, let me think about the devotees. Let me think about devotees who come to the temple Wednesday. Okay, go from one by one. That means it gave me so much peace of mind thinking about devotees. Because they are devotees and they are doing all this Krishna consciousness. Let me just think about them.
Wow.
In this way, I could really improve my rounds. Even though I do like only 2 rounds a day, but they were really quality.
See, this is Buddha Yoga. Krishna is, if somebody's sincere and they say, I'm going to do this, Krishna, and Krishna revealed to her within her heart and said, think of the devotees. And then that gave her, this is Buddha Yoga. Very nice. Prabhuji?
Which is easy. Maybe I can achieve it in 1 year, half year. So that will help me, really help. And then if I will get this result and I will see, oh, right, yeah, I got this result. My consciousness changed. Now I'm this level. So, I mean, if there will be the clear vision of next level, next level, next level, it will help a lot to change.
So then you have 2 homeworks. One, you have to make an outline of different levels. If you could just...
Oh, there is levels.
I know, that's what I'm saying. So you make an outline. Yeah, make us like a rough outline of what the different levels could be, your goals. And then we'll, and then also the thing about the... we'll start yoga classes. So just make some outlines of those of your thoughts and ideas. And I thought, since time is getting late, we'll just and have Satyadev Prabhu give us some advice about some of these things, like some of the things that devotees are bringing up, like we feel overwhelmed by... we sit down and we're thinking, I'm not chanting right. And then, like, how to overcome that? That seems to be a there's so much. We're thinking, uh-oh, wait a minute, no, I'm not doing it right. That's one thing. And maybe if you heard other things that you want to address, you want to give some thoughts or guidelines for that?
I think it's important not to be too hard on ourselves. To realize that it's a long battle, and that we should expect that our mind is going to wander. So we should try and, I mean, like in this yoga class, the techniques and the things that we mentioned are really their techniques and their guidelines. And we can all discover on our own, you know, what is helpful and what is not helpful. Just like she found a solution to her wandering mind. And so, like Vaishyashikapra was saying, when we're sincere and we want to improve, it's good to become conscious that we're not doing, maybe we're not doing it right. That what we gave you is not necessarily a standard, but it's just a place to get started from. And these things will help. And there'll be things that are helpful to our japa, and then there's things we're going to notice that aren't helpful. And if we become conscious of what those things are and we make adjustments, then we'll make improvement. For some people, walking is okay, as long as attention is still there. But if you notice the attention is not there, then it's time to make an adjustment. And so these were just guidelines, really. And some of the guidelines are given by Krishna. And they're from the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And so they're very powerful if we apply them. But they're not hard and fast rules to chanting. But it is, we should know, and we should practice abhyasa and vairagya. We should notice when our attention is wandering off the name, and we should bring it back. And that's detachment. We should bring it back, and we should find the means to help us do that, with chanting in a group of devotees, or making a sacred place, or sitting down, or wearing earplugs, or even if you just do one of the things, like Acharya is suggesting, make a goal, okay, I'm just going to do one of these things. Or maybe I can't be attentive for 16 rounds, but let me at least do it for one round, make a goal like that. Discuss it with your peers, what's working, what's not working, and keep trying to make progress. And what other thing was I say, that an interim goal for all devotees should become nishta, to try and become, and maybe we aren't going to experience the sweetness of the name or pure love of God right away, but if we can just come to being steady in our practice, then all results will come from that. Mm. You can just get to that steadiness. Mm. So that's a good interim goal, which may take a long time.
You point out oftentimes, and it's in the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's writings, that you know, coming to nishta means that you're going to go through anishta. You know, when you're trying to become steady, you should expect these things, that you're going to be bombarded. And one day you'll be up, and next day you'll be down. And don't become discouraged by that. Rather, just go on doing it. Abhyas means one day you're up, one day you're down, but you do it anyway. And just keep doing it. Even if it's the worst rounds you ever chanted in your life, you have that underlying feeling that I did it anyway. I still did it. And going on like that with, rain, sleet, snow, atomic bombs going off, whatever it is, do your rounds and get used to that. And then gradually, Krishna gives some mercy. It actually is a descending process. It's not that, you know, part of the optimism of this Buddha Yoga is it's not by our strength. We put out half, and Krishna will also come out the other side. The story is there in the Krishna book about how Mother Jashoda tries to tie baby Krishna with, you know, ropes and ribbons and all these types of things. And always, how many inches short? 2 inches too short. So Vishwanath, in his commentary, says that 1 inch is our endeavor. The other inch comes from Krishna's side. So we have to put out our endeavor that I'm going to sit down, even though my mind says no. Or I'm going to, you know, put my hand in my bead bag and start, I'll do 3 mantras, and then three more, and go on. That's our side. But we should also be optimistic and know that Krishna is there on the other side. Not that we're going to do the whole thing, but he'll descend, he'll help us. And we'll see, you know, that nishtha is mercy. To be able to follow 4 regulative principles steadily for one's life without this is great mercy. It means that we've gotten somewhere. To be able to chant, you know, 1 round steadily every day, 2 rounds steadily every day, 4 rounds, 6 rounds, any steadiness comes from Krishna's mercy. So, you know, not ordinary people can't do that. Only somebody with some mercy. And if we have a little mercy, try to get a little more. Build on it. Yes.
I just had a question about the technique, some of the points that were made, and there was an earlier comment about close your eyes and chant. What is the thinking on that, closing your eyes? Because Prabhupada in his writings is recommending that you need to keep your eyes open and one can fall asleep. Is that actually relevant here? As to, for example, some people even try to chant in bed. Yeah. You know, I've heard some people saying, just before going to sleep, they may chant. And may keep their eyes closed. So, the recommended practice or not the recommended practice?
That's true, Prabhupada. He talks about people who meditate and close their eyes and that they end up sleeping. So, I think this is a very individual thing. And one of the things I was thinking of this japa seminar was to stimulate devotees to experiment in their own japa. So you can experiment yourself and see if you become sleepy or not. And generally, if you close your eyes, then where are you going to focus? And so if you don't have a place to focus, I wouldn't recommend closing your eyes. No, you can look at the deities. Personally, I chant with my eyes closed and I focus on the brow chakra. And that makes it very easy for me to chant. But I've told that to other people and some devotees that just it's confusing or they get sleepy. So some people, there's a practice actually looking at the Hare Krishna mantra as you chant. So engage the eyes, you know, and looking at the form of the deity, looking at a picture of Srila Prabhupada, reading the Hare Krishna mantra. See what happens if you focus here. See if it helps. Experiment a little. Find out if you fall asleep. I guarantee if you close your eyes and you don't keep your back straight, you'll fall asleep. But if you keep your back straight and the energy is flowing up, you might be surprised how alert you are. Try experimenting with what works. Become aware of what's not working and what is working. And it'll be different for different devotees.
Chanting in bed also is, it's not that it's bad. In fact, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself had named one of the great devotees Gopal Guru, because when someone went in the field to pass, he had come back and he was saying that he was holding his tongue because, I shouldn't chant the name while I'm passing. And this young boy, Gopal, his name was Gopal, he said, no, the name is completely pure and you should always chant at any time, in any circumstance. And Mahaprabhu heard that and he said, this boy is Guru. Therefore, his name shall be Gopal Guru. And his point was that the chanting should go on 24 hours a day. So it's not that we chant our 16 rounds, put the bead bag down, turn on the television, and then, you know. Or the point is, actually 16 rounds is not the goal. It's incessant chanting is the goal. It means kirtaniya sadahari, going on constantly chanting. But we need numerical strength. We need to come to a position. And chanting in bed or chanting at other times, that should go on also. Not that we chant our 16 rounds in bed, though, or, you know, lie down and think, you know, while we're driving or something like that and count those. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Nilesh. You had a point.
Well, I think partly you answered this question, but my question was, what is the goal of the chant? Is it okay to think like this? Like Mataji said that Krishna-related thing, if it interests you, is it okay to think, is it bona fide?
You know, Satyadev Prabhu answered that during the seminar. He said that Prabhupada had said that we shouldn't artificially try to think of Krishna's pastimes, but if they come into our mind automatically, then we can entertain them. I could just say from my personal experience in chanting, there are ways in which I'm able to fix my mind by one thing I think of is I put my mind in Vrindavan. Certain places, I like the Govardhan Parikram in Vrindavan very much. And there's certain places along the Parikram path where I really feel Lord Chaitanya's presence, and one of those is the Haridev temple. And sometimes when I sit down to chant, I'll meditate first as a beginning, then I'll place my mind there, and I'll remember what it's like to start off on the Parikram. You get out of the cab and you offer your obeisances on the marg, and then I get to that place in my mind, and that's where I'm staying now. That's where my mind is. And that helps me to now concentrate on the mantra. So for me, it helps, because then I'm in a mood and I'm thinking Vrindavan and the, you know. So it's not a hard and fast rule, but, you know, if it's artificial, you won't get the result. And if we're just trying to force our mind in a certain way, like there was this guy that joined the San Francisco Temple right after we joined, I think it was in 1973, and he had a harmonica holder. And, you know, harmonica holder, it goes around, you know what a harmonica is, right? And so Bob Dylan used to wear one, and they had this thing, and it holds the harmonica here so you can play the guitar and play the harmonica at the same time, like that. So what he did is he took the harmonica holder and he took a picture of Krishna on a little board and he pasted it on there. So the picture was right in front of his face. And then it's like everyone said, well, what are you doing? And he's like, well, I want to remember Krishna 24 hours a day. And he used to circumambulate the temple room looking at that picture. Of course, it was hard for him to do any service because the picture was there. And then he started going around the temple outside, and then pretty soon he was going around the city, and then we never saw him again. And also, you know, this idea of going to a holy place and just chanting, and there's a way that if our mind isn't ready for it, we'll just become agitated. We'll think of sense gratification. So we have to be practical.
One of the main points, you know, the three P's was posture, pronunciation, and prayer. And probably the most important point is prayer. So whatever gets you in a prayerful mood, then automatically the attention is there. Whether if it's thinking of how wonderful devotees are, or your favorite place in Vrindavan. For me, I'm very attracted to Sankhya, I'll admit it. And I like to go through a process of separating myself from the material energy and human beings can be aware. We can be aware of ourselves. That's something that animals can't do. So if I try and become aware of myself, just myself, and then how myself is you know, related to Krishna and how Krishna is my life. And then the prayerful mood comes from that. So find out what gets you in that prayerful mood. Is it looking at the deities? Is it thinking of devotees? Is it going to a place of Vrindavan in your mind? But the main thing is to become aware of what you're aware of. You know, are you being, are you aware of the name? Are you aware of Krishna? Or are you just letting the attention wander wherever it wants? So these are just guidelines for it.
Nice. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Shri Harinam Prabhu ki jai. Gopri Manandi Hari Hari Bol.